This is review. And big principle number two is fill yourself with your focus. Now, this is really just a subcategory of principle number one we talked about. What was principle number one that we talked about? Fill the void. So this is filling yourself, specifically focusing on that. And the homework will be here from when you're leaving class. Okay, so we fill our mind with what we're focused on. We move towards what we're focused on. You don't keep away from the foods that you shouldn't eat by thinking about them. You keep away from the foods you shouldn't eat by forgetting about them and focusing on other things, better things. So you choose what you want to focus on. Be wise about what you choose to focus on. Obviously, this goes along with principle number one. It's really just a subcategory. But the scripture has enough to say about this that it deserves its own principle. So let your focus fill you. Keep refilling yourself with what you need to be thinking about. So this was the homework. I emailed it out just so you could look at these verses. We looked at Proverbs 4, 20 through 27. This is where we wrapped up class on Sunday. You definitely see this. I even quoted this verse to someone today, this passage. Proverbs 4, verse 20. My son, be attentive to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Let them not escape from your sight. Keep them within your heart. Their life to those who find them, healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you crooked speech and put devious talk far from you. Let your eyes look directly forward. Your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet, that all your ways will be sure. Don't swerve to the right or the left. Turn your foot away from evil. So some just these passages just have such an emphasis on what our focus needs to be. Listen, right? Keep it within your heart. Keep your heart with all vigilance. And then we have the section here at the end about let your eyes stay focused ahead of you. Don't gaze other places. Keep your feet on the path. Keep looking where you want to go. So just a great picture here for spiritual growth, doing the right thing. This is going to be my focus. I'm going to keep my focus. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Yeah, that's Hebrews 12. Fix your eyes on Jesus. And this idea of let what you focus on, let that fill you. Any other thoughts here in Proverbs 4? So we also see this same principle here in Romans 8. For those who live according to the flesh, set their minds on the things of the flesh. Those who live according to the Spirit, set their minds on the things of the Spirit. To set the mind on the flesh is death. To set the mind on the Spirit is life and peace. The mind that's set on the flesh is hostile to God, for it doesn't submit to God's law. It can't submit to God's law. Those who are in the flesh cannot please God. That doesn't mean you and I, humans, like in the flesh. It means living in the flesh. So what in here shows us this idea of your focus? What's that? Yes, and how does it describe our relationship to them? Setting your mind, right? That's one of these phrases that keeps showing up here. Set their minds on the things of the flesh. You do that, you'll live according to the flesh. But those who live according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. So setting your mind on spiritual things. And if you do that, that'll be life and peace, right? And the mind that's set on the flesh is hostile to God. It doesn't submit. It can't submit. I think what Paul's getting at there is if you're serving two masters, you're never going to be able to rest in God. And so if you still really want that sin, you also partially want to do what's right. Well, that's Romans 7 kind of stuff. You're not doing what you want to do. You're doing what you don't want to do. No, have more of a single-minded purpose and really submit to God and have your mind set fully on spiritual things, kind of a losing of selfishness, filling yourself up with Christ and His Spirit. Self-forgetfulness is a great word along those lines. And then you'll be able to submit. You're fully submitting to God's ways. Yeah, Dave.
Colossians 3 is another great...
Yes, that's like one of the next slides, yeah. But it's Paul, so... Surprised we see it again, similarly, but slightly different in a different epistle. Yeah, Heather.
I was thinking about setting your mind on the Spirit takes you out of the world, so it takes you to, like, what's eternally going to be important
yes.
in this situation. how those thoughts bring life and peace, not just in the life to come, but right now. Like when I'm not so worried about material things are going to pass, I have so much more peace in the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's a life-giving versus just draining.
Absolutely, yes. So just to take it, my mind went to like money things while you were saying that. It's like, if I want to serve God, but I also am really concerned about money, that seems like a James 4, you're double-minded, right? You want to do what's right, but you also have this. So Paul would say here in the language of Romans 8, is set your mind on spiritual things, on things of the Spirit, and then you'll be able to submit. So I need to really just stop worrying about the money thing, just focus on God, and then I'm just have so much more peace because I'm not torn. The whole reason you get torn is because two things are pulling on you. When you're just pulled by God, you're not being torn, you're in the things of the Spirit. Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking about it in relationships, how if we're not fighting against flesh and blood, I'm having a conflict with someone, if my mind's on the things of the Spirit, then I realize this problem is a spiritual problem. What's Satan, what victory is he trying to win here?
Yep.
And what spiritual tools are available to me, which also gives me life.
Yes, it just applies to so many things. You know, this language is generic, and so we're going to find it has relationship applications, you know, my personal holiness applications as a church, just all these kinds of things. So I need to surrender, let go of worldly things that cling to me, set my mind on things of the Spirit, submit myself to God's will, focus on things of the Spirit, that set my mind idea. So what's your focus? So we want to focus on reward of heaven, right? Eternal things, the eternal home, punishment of hell. That can be very helpful, a spiritual thing to think about. There's a preacher I know who, when I started talking to him more about anxiety things, he had already conquered his pornography problem previously, 2-3 years in the past. And he said the only thing that really helped him out of the pornography problem was really thinking about the negative side. I don't want to have to tell the person I'm talking to about this. I don't want to feel that shame. Is this the only thing? No. Is it one thing? Yes. And here's what's interesting. Psychology says that pain is a more potent behavior changer than pleasure. That the thought of something pleasurable is not as motivating as the thought of something painful. So you can read the studies about that. But here's how you illustrate that in everyday life. How exciting is it when you find, say, a $50 bill in your pocket that you didn't know was there? Kind of exciting, but not like, you know, the throw a parade, best day of the year, right? Okay. How frustrating is it if you lose $50, say, because your boss finds you, you get a speeding ticket or something like that, and you lose $50? How painful is that? Like, you will remember that the rest of your life. Oh, I can't believe you pulled me over. I was, you know. Whereas the up 50 is nice, but not like game changer. The down 50 is extremely painful. That just illustrates the point of the promise of pain is more motivating than the promise of pleasure. Does God know that about us? Yes, he made us. So is the anticipation of punishment part of necessary Christian motivation? Yes. It's not everything. As we grow in Christ, perfect love casts out fear. But it's in Scripture for a reason. Okay, the love of God, loving others, pleasing God, that feeling of hearing, well done, good and faithful servant, right? I want to please my Father. I love my relationship with my Father. Your obligations, what's actually before you, right? Fears tend to focus on things that aren't there. What's in front of you, that does need to be taken care of and focused on, right? Focus on what's in front of you. Focus on what God has done for you. Focus on the person right there you're talking to. Focus on the opportunities to serve the right there instead of maybes and what ifs. All these things are just good things to focus on that are spiritually useful and helpful. The full gamut, but you know, fill yourself up with your focus. What can I do to serve here? I'm thinking about myself. What can I do instead to be a blessing to these people that I'm around? Don't focus on the thing that tempts you, right? If you sit around thinking about how good donuts are all day, you're going to move towards donuts. That's what you're focused on, right? That's just going to happen in your life. You instead, you think about better things and you just forget about donuts. You know, that's why you put it in your freezer. Of course you're going to eat it. You know what I mean? So don't buy it and put it in your freezer and then say, well, I had ice cream again. Well, yeah, because you bought it and put it in your freezer. So don't focus on the thing that tempts you. Don't focus on how hard it is. Don't focus on woe is me, right? God wants to meet you in your sorrow, but we need to let God meet us so we're not living in woe is me, but instead find comfort in our sorrow. Here's a good example, the leeks and onions you had in Egypt. What does that mean? What's the leeks and onions you had in Egypt?
That's what the Israelites were whining about when they had
manna. So there's all those amazing things about Egypt life, right? Man, they got free food, they had free lodging, and life was just so great. And I can't believe God took us out here in the wilderness to die, right? Was that the right way to think about it? No. So they're out of the slavery, but all they can think about is the good things that they missed. Was the food better tasting in Egypt? I think it probably was. God said, I gave you the same food every day for 40 years so that you would learn that man doesn't live by bread alone. Like, I tested you with that. So yeah, I bet the leeks and onions, they did miss that. But don't focus on the leeks and onions that you had in sin. Don't look back at sin and think about how great that was. Think about the blessings you have in Christ. Acknowledging something is different than focusing on it, you know. If you come up to someone after class and be like, you know, I was just thinking about all those old friends that I used to have, and I, you know, just realized that I'm tempted by that. Don't bring that up. Don't say those words. No, you can acknowledge or talk about it. In your life, though, don't focus on what seems so good, those leeks and onions that you think in the moment was so great about your sinful life. No, it wasn't that great. That's just your flesh trying to bring you back to what's comfortable and what's pleasurable. Okay, here is David's passage. You mentioned Colossians 3, 1 through 5. If then you've been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For you've died, your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. So put to death what's earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. It goes on, passage there. But where do we see fill yourself with your focus here in Colossians 3?
Set your mind above.
Set your minds. Now, the language is slightly different. It's not set your mind on things of the Spirit like Romans 8. It's set your mind on things above. The things that are above, think about Christ. It's the same basic point, right? And you've died. These things should be dead to you down here. This is not what's important. So seek the above things where Christ is. Set your mind on above things. Don't be focused on these things. You focus on the pain and how hard it is to be a Christian. Well, yeah, you're going to feel like you're giving up. You focus on eternal things. That gives you the motivation because you're not sitting around and focusing on what hurts. You know, that's what pain psychologists would tell you. You sit there thinking about how painful it is. Your pain's going to amplify, your pain is going to increase. You distract yourself, you are helping others, you're focused on other things, your pain levels go down. It's the exact same principle. So if that works for our pain, body pain, chronic pain, by you don't sit around focusing on it, you focus on other things, that is very true of spiritual things as well. You've died, so these things should be dead to you. Put those things to death, put them really behind you. So kill the things that need to die, seek Christ, and seek heavenly things. Okay, so that's principle number two. We've had a good time on that. David, do you have a quick comment?
Yeah, you talked earlier about putting your focus far out in front of you, your target. And a long time ago, they used to have these PMA rallies, positive mental attitude rallies. And
really?
When I was in college, and that was a big thing. It was sales oriented and that kind of stuff.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
You can picture why, but I mean, if you have those targets, those goals,
yes,
you're looking at that. And if you're looking at that goal, you're thinking everything that you can do to achieve that goal.
Yes.
So if you set your mind in heaven, you're looking at everything you can do to achieve that goal.
Absolutely. So you're just plodding along a job, and you're hungry. You're like, when's my lunch break? Oh, good, it's lunch break. You take a long lunch break. If you have the goal of, I need to make 200 calls today. Oh, I'm on track. I don't want to get behind it. I'll eat my sandwich while I make this next call. You're thinking about the goal. You're focused on that goal. Absolutely. Yep. Okay, now principle number three, fully commit to fully commit, right? So this is a commitment, but trying to be a little deeper than just commit. Commit yourself fully, but we're going to have to recommit. You can't fight tomorrow's battles today. This is a day I need to commit. But I need to follow through with that and have a mindset of recommitment. So fully commit to fully commit. We saw that in Colossians 3, put those things to death. Keep putting those things to death. Part of making things dead to you is that you're fully letting go, right? That's part of the challenge. Is, remember what Paul said, if your mind isn't set on the Spirit, you can't submit. If you're still kind of clinging to things of this life, it's going to be so hard to do the right thing because you're still trying to serve two masters. You're still being double-minded. So you let those things go. You fully let go. And that then you're not torn anymore. You're moving forward. We need God's help with this, right? It's very hard, right? God gives us his word because it is hard to let those things go and to recommit every day. Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will we go limping between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. If Baal, follow him. And this picture of kind of going back and forth, that's what we do, right? We go back and forth, God and then worldliness, and God and then worldliness. So commit yourself fully, then recommit and recommit. Commit yourself to committing yourself. We call this being decisive, right? A great verse for this, Jeremiah 4:1. Remove the detestable things from my presence and do not waver. So the idea of stick with it. And it's hard. God tells us that because it's hard. If it was easy, you wouldn't have to keep telling us it. So remove those things and be decisive and don't waver and be committed to coming back and recommitting. We can only tackle life one day at a time. Jesus says that, you know, tomorrow has enough worries. So you can't fight that battle yet. You don't have to. That's tomorrow. But today, I can recommit myself and I can be strong for today. We can help ourselves. Then, once you understand that, you also see that today sets up the momentum for tomorrow. So I made the 200 calls today and I feel good. And that propels me to then make 200 calls tomorrow. And I'm setting myself up for success. What happens if we're lazy? Is that setting ourselves up very good for the next day? No, it's easy to stick in that, right? So we help ourselves make those decisions for the future by making good choices now. Nehemiah 9 and 10 principle is the people there make a firm commitment and then they write it down. They literally put pen to paper and write it down, right? We make a firm covenant, a commitment of this to do these things. On the sealed document are the names of our princes, our Levites, and our priests. Nehemiah 10, we will not give our daughters to the people of the land. We won't take their daughters, we won't neglect the house of God, etc. All the details of it. But they say, here's what we're going to do, here's what we're going to do. So they write that out. They make a firm commitment. It's good to write down the commitment. You know, what's the goal for today? And I'm going to try to get through this to-do list, whatever.
Didn't they have the blessings and cursings mounted, basically, or up?
They read through stuff in chapter 9, 8, I kind of forget the story. 9 is then the prayer of confession, and so I don't remember. Is there something in there? Oh, well, this is just in Jerusalem in Nehemiah. But yes, in the law they talk about go to Ebal and Gerizim, speak the curses, speak the blessings. There's the whole carrot and stick thing, both. You know, here's the blessings and here's the curses. Yes.
So a lot of these are talking about when somebody's on the pit, either depression or anxiety or whatever it is. And the thing that comes to my mind, and I don't know if this falls under this, but I think all of us, maybe as parents, there was maybe a time when, with the little ones, when we struggled the most. For me, it was with the third kid. For Aaron, it was the fourth kid. And I remember when, like, I think we all understand what is being overwhelmed in life. And when you're overwhelmed, you reach a point you realize, like, you really need to focus a day at a time. Like,
yes.
it is that much. Then you're like, okay. And if there's, and I remember learning from a lot of other people, like, for example, the Jones, the fathers of Luke Jones, they would say, like Jill would say, because they had a lot of kids, it's like, the kids knew where clean clothes were, and that's it. They will know how to get them. The goal was clean clothes. Not like, okay, I'm going to go and organize them pretty in a drawer. There's no way.
Yeah.
So at least, okay, there was clean clothes, there was food, some basic stuff. So whenever you realize that when you're on the pit and you focus, you realize this is a few things that are really priority. So that's what comes to my mind. But I don't know if that's when somebody's dealing with a lot of anxiety, depression, or a lot of those things, are those the things that you normally recommend to try to focus into really basic things like that to to move away a lot of the noise?
Yeah, yes. So definitely a helpful step when any of us are feeling overwhelmed is be able to take small steps. You don't want to bite off more than you can chew. And so it's a huge task. Well, I don't even want to get started. I get depressed even thinking about it. Well, can you work on it for 15 minutes? Now, sometimes what happens is we're working for 15 minutes and we can keep going. But let's at least make progress on it. And that then becomes the snowball effect where we can make progress and do that. And so lowering expectations, I want this to be done today. Well, it's not gonna be done today. But if we can have clean clothes with success, you know, and so kind of changing expectations, certainly accomplishing things helps us feel good. That gives us that dopamine. I'm making progress. The depression will alleviate when it's not such a burden. The anxiety will alleviate if it is getting more control over it. People are helping you, people are encouraging you, all those kinds of things. So yeah, I would say that applies. Yeah, Jen.
I think sometimes it's easy to have like kind of an all or nothing approach and think, well, I fell off the bandwagon, and just kind of stay off. But I think maybe having an idea of like, okay, I can expect there will be difficulties and ups and downs. Like when this happens, what can I do to like try and get back on track? Instead of thinking, well, if I mess up, then like,
yes,
that's the end of it. You
yes.
Know? Why try again? Because I know I'm going to mess up again.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes that all or nothing thinking is really debilitating. I think in it, you know, wisdom is often knowing how to apply certain proverbs, but the proverb of the perfect is the enemy of the good is often very helpful. I don't want to do anything because it won't be perfect. Well, it's okay if it's not perfect, but doing something would be good. You know, I don't want to write a book. It can't be perfect. I don't want to teach a class. It would be perfect. Well, it doesn't have to be perfect. If it's really good, that's going to be helpful. So yeah, so reframing things like that of, you know, it's better to be doing something than to be doing nothing. There. Okay, so the idea of surrendering and committing here, the idea of surrendering, you could connect surrendering with principle number two, which is focus, and so I got to let go to focus, or you could connect surrendering with fully committing. It kind of goes either way. In principle two, you focus on where we're going, we let go of all these other things that are dead to me. In principle three, part of my commitment is fully letting go. So you can see how kind of dropping it, letting it go, it kind of shows up in both of those. And all this, remember that God's the one ultimately responsible for growth. When we don't see the way, God can provide the way, right? God always makes a way for his people. So we commit, we do our best to commit, we turn to God because I say I'm weak, right? I need thee every hour. I'm going to need your help through this, God. Okay, so as we get into principle number four, and then for the last classes of the quarter here, we are going to be digging into some of our more specific problems in the sense of speaking a little more directly to anxiety, depression, addiction, anger, and shame. So this fits in with kind of the emotions that we've been talking about. Anxiety when you're ruled by fear, depression when you're ruled by sadness, addiction when you're controlled by pleasure or pain, anger, of course, has to do with mad, and shame, your sense of self. So big principle number four that we'll talk about today and, God willing, on Sunday as well, this is the fourth of four, this is the last of the big principles, is do the opposite. So if there's one kind of key principle to take from this that applies to all of these, that applies to, you know, anger issues and shame issues and addiction and depression, anxiety, is this. And this is hopefully fairly memorable, and it's just such a good tool for us. In general, your goals are the opposite of what the disorder wants you to do. That's just kind of your go-to thumbnail approach. Got to do the opposite of what the disorder wants you to do. Now, obviously, that's simplified. That's oversimplified. But because it's true in so many ways, it gives us a good framework. I want to do the opposite of what the disorder wants me to do. Ever thought about this? How that sometimes our challenges resolve themselves fairly well, right? We moved to a new place. I lost all my friends. I was depressed. And 2 months later, I was just kind of better. Like, oh, okay. And then other times, people find themselves in a situation where it seems like it's the same thing, but then no, they fall into a very big big pit, really bad pit. So what's the difference? What's the difference between the two paths of some things resolve themselves and some things go down to a very bad pit? Well, obviously, it's complicated. Well, why some things resolve and why some things fully take over. But things we want to look for is, are we feeding the disorder or strengthening it? Are we giving it more power, right? So if it's a drug addiction, I keep going back to the drugs. It's not getting me the high I want, so I am going back and then taking more drugs and more frequently. Well, you're making it worse. You're feeding it, right? So if you're feeding it, strengthening it, and giving it more power, then naturally you're not going to get out of the pit that way. You're just going to be digging further and further. You might be feeding it unintentionally, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But sometimes our mindset is, I'm doing what I think I'm supposed to do. Well, that's what's gotten you in trouble, is you think you're supposed to do, but that's actually going to just make the whole thing worse. The worst is when it's feeding itself, like the disorder itself is feeding the disorder, creating the downward spiral, creating a feedback loop where it's getting sucked into it more and more. We'll talk about that in a second. And then the other piece of it is kind of the other side of the coin, is we may not be doing the things that would help us improve, right? So this time when I got depressed, I was working outside a lot, and that exercise just kind of helped me, right? Whereas the other time I was stuck inside because I broke my ankle, and so I couldn't exercise. So that just made things, because I couldn't be doing the things that would help me. So we may not be doing the things that help us improve, that counteract it, that make choices that help me get out of the pit, form those new brain pathways, etc. Okay. So when we can identify the things that lead to the downward spiral and not do them, and if we can identify the things that help us out of the disorder and keep doing them, that's going to be a clear path to victory. Does that make sense? It's like, don't feed the bad, starve the bad. Don't starve the good, feed the good. That's the basic approach here. So, so before we get into specifics, how do you see these things applying to disorders? In other words, you can think about, what are things that feed anxiety, what are things that feed depression, make it worse, get it in a downward spiral, etc. Then what are things I can do that help me overcome, lessen its power, right? Not get sucked in, make new pathways in the brain. So you can be thinking about that, is in these five specific categories we'll be talking about, what are things I can do that will help me out, strengthen the good side, starve the bad, or what are things that I'm doing that are feeding the bad? There's an OCD guy who's written books, and he talks about, he uses this illustration of, like, I think he was maybe talking to his kids, but it's like this enormous doubting octopus, and you keep throwing donuts at it, and you're feeding it, and his kid goes, instead of throwing donuts, you're throwing doubt nuts, because it's doubting, you know. So it's that idea, like, you're feeding the monster doubt nuts. Anyways, that comes to mind. Okay, so in general, your goals are the opposite of what the disorder wants you to do. So obviously oversimplified. And when you can identify the tendencies that feed the disorder and lead to downward spirals and not do them, do the opposite, that's going to be helpful. You want to especially be watching out for feedback loops. In other words, the things that just make, that feed itself. And maybe you can notice some of these in yourself. One of the hardest parts about anxiety is when it's convincing us that we need to be anxious. So I think it's my job to be anxious, or the anxiety is making me anxious. So like panic. Oh, I think I'm panicking. Oh, I think I'm about to panic. And then the panic is making me panic. That's feedback, right? That's a feedback loop of getting the volume out of control, right? When you think it's your job to be anxious, maybe because that's how mom and dad handled things, that's why I feel like it's my job as a Christian, you know, that's going to make it really hard. Lots of growth can happen just by learning that the anxiety is hurting me, not helping me. Actually, you'll make better decisions if you let this go. You'll make worse decisions if you keep trying to solve this, you keep trying to worry about it. And even that is going to starve the bad and feed the good, right? One of the hardest parts about depression is when it's convinced you it's good to be depressed. It's better to be depressed. I should be depressed. I don't want to not be depressed. Well, if you're depressed and you want out of it, that's better. When you're depressed and you don't want out of it, how do you help someone out of it, right? That's what's so hard, right? How can you help someone with their lack of motivation if they think it's good not to have that motivation, right? It's good not to listen to you, et cetera. And other examples of that, some other common feedback loops. Shame easily convinces me I should feel shame, right? Oh, I feel shame and I'm supposed to, right? Like, I'm so bad, I'm so stupid, I'm so worthless, I should be feeling this. Well, it's kind of hard to pull you out of that when you not only feel it, but you feel like you should be feeling it. Panicking that makes you panic, we talked about that. Feeling embarrassed that you feel embarrassed, right? So you have social anxiety, and when you talk to people, you start getting sweaty. Well, then you are afraid that they notice that you're getting sweaty. So then it makes the whole thing worse. You see that? Because not only, first I was embarrassed, and then, oh no, it's worse because I am embarrassed, and I'm embarrassed that I'm embarrassed, and the whole thing kind of, you know, goes downhill from that. Okay, so fill the void, fill yourself with your focus, fully commit yourself, be determined, fully surrender, and do the opposite. So we're going to kind of move into these things here. If you're wanting a mnemonic device, this is the best thing I could do. So all of them start with F. So fill, don't just stop the bad things, right? You're not just focused on the thing you want to stop. What can I do to fill myself with the good things? So fill, focus on the direction you're headed, fully commit, fully drop, and then fight by doing the opposite. That's my best attempt at a mnemonic device. You may come up with something better. So fill, focus, fully commit, and fight by doing the opposite. So that's kind of our principles with that. Okay, so the homework is, this got printed the same thing on two sides, which is absurd. So instead of it doing different things on the side, this is double. So you're not seeing double, it's actually double. So you wanna pick up two pages instead. The first page is all about principle number one, and then the second page, it says principle two, three, and four. And this, be thinking about how can you apply these principles we just talked about, fill the void, focus, fully commit, and do the opposite. How can you apply that to, and here the hypothetical that we're applying it to is the man's habit of looking at pornography. So look at that, and that's gonna be your homework for Sunday. Okay. So doing the opposite. So in anxiety, how do we apply this? So anxiety wants to avoid. So now we're applying principle number four to the opposite to anxiety. Anxiety in general wants to shrink back. I like that terminology. That's Hebrews 10 and Acts 20 that talk about shrinking back. So anxiety wants to avoid and to shrink back. So to grow out of it, we need to do the last thing we want to do, which is actually confront the fear. We need to face it. So to grow out of it, you confront it, you learn to stand your ground to the thing. You can stand your ground to your own emotions. You can stand your ground to the kind of the voice in your head that's pushing you, that kind of that demon thing we talked about. Stand your ground to the emotions, stand your ground to the bullying, the reality-altering distortions that come. Here's the thing, this is just thrown in here very quickly, but the fact is that fear distorts our reality. We're just not thinking rationally. And the worse the fear is, the worse the anxiety is, the more we're distorting it. And so to be able to pull out of that and to stand up to it is just one of the key things. So, you know, let's take what's something that people are sometimes afraid of out there. Name a common fear.
Heights.
So you want to avoid heights. You don't want to get on a ladder. You don't want to, whatever, if you're having to climb up the stairs of your house, you walk away from the railing towards the wall. You're avoiding it, right? You're not playing with it. You're running away from it in your mind. You don't want to think about it. You don't like bridges. You avoid bridges. And you know that kind of thing. Well, it may be managed. It may not be taking over your life. But if you want to conquer that, you just learn to face it. What's that?
Skydive.
I wouldn't recommend that as step number one. You can do all kinds of things, but instead of shrinking back from it, even just mentally in my heart, shrinking back from the thing, I'm going to stand my ground more. That then moves things in the right direction. Okay. Yeah, there it is. This can even be just standing our ground in our heart, not shrinking back. The other thing anxiety wants to do is it wants to fix, right? There's a problem. I'm afraid of that. I need to fix it. I need to do something. I can't sit here and rest. I can't relax. That's for sure. I need to fix it, right? So to grow out of that, we want to do the opposite, which is not fix, which is not try to solve it, not try to do anything. Let the dishes be dirty in the sink. I don't need to fix that. The world's not going to end if I don't get to the dishes. Those kinds of things, right? So learning to let go and to not fix, right? Dropping things and letting go is a fundamental skill for tackling anxiety. I'm trying to hold on to it. I need to do something. I can't drop this. The minute that this conversation is over, I need to rush over and send that text message or whatever. No, dropping that and letting that go is just one of the most fundamental skills for improving anxiety. Ideally, Christians should be great at dropping things. We've talked about this enough this quarter. Finish that sentence. Why should Christians be able to become very good at dropping things? Because, yes, even more generally than that. Because God. What's that?
God is in control.
God's in control. I'm not the one ultimately in control. Anxiety craves control. We'll talk about that later. The three things anxiety wants are comfort, certainty, and control. And we want control. But guess what? We're not in control. And God's in control. And God is good. And God's on my side. So I can drop this. I can let this go. Yes, Miriam?
What book is it? I feel like it's the 12 Steps, a 12 Steps book talks about your circle of control.
And oh, yeah, like your locus of control or...
Yeah, that's your circle of control. And many times we want to step out of that circle and be all anxious and upset or just try to control so much that
we can't control.
Not within our circle of control.
Yes, yeah. I'm not sure, but yeah, that's a good concept of... Mm-hmm. Look, if I can't control it, then I need to let it go, right? And the world doesn't understand. The world, well, I need to keep worrying about that. I need to keep, you know, one more political rally will solve all our problems. I need to just do more. Like, no, like God's in control. I've done what I can, whatever, you know. So ideally, we should be great at dropping things and can work towards that.
5-minute warning.
Because we can trust that God is at work helping me in my problems. He knows the number of hairs on my head. No sparrow falls to the ground without God knowing. So I should be able to learn that. It's hard. It's crazy hard. It's really hard. But I should be able to learn that because we can trust that God is at work helping me in my problems. It's like all those psalms where they bring their problems to God and they trust that he heard. He's on the job. God is working to solve the problem that I brought before him. So I can let go. I really can lie down and sleep in peace. Psalm 3 or 4. Which one is it? Anyways. Psalm 3 or 4, you'll find it. You know, I really can lie down and sleep in peace because you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. I think it's Psalm 4. So, okay.
23 says,
lie down in green pastures. Yes, yes. Elias.
Because you're talking about opposites, but when you're looking at anxiety, it's also when you're looking at body and everything, there's things like, because like at home, like we have multiple people deal with anxiety, but there's things you can deal with also, like stop drinking that much coffee or getting some tea that night that helps you with it. There's some specific things that you can, pills or something you can also take that are mainly medicine also. There's a lot of things you can do. There's routines you can do to not have a lot of electronics at night. And so there's so many things that, like heavy blankets, there's all kind of stuff that can help you deal with it, but when you're dealing with the opposites, of course, it's not like I'm gonna go and chug a bunch of coffee throughout the whole day. Like that's not gonna help you.
Yes. So every person is different, and here's the challenge: is that if you've got some kind of deep stuff going on, then the herbal tea at night and the weighted blanket, it may help things temporarily. But if there's really kind of a thing going on, it's not going to be the long-term solution to it. And so that's where things like, I'm going to tackle this. I need to deal with it. Be open about it. Really face it. So here's the emotional story to wrap up the night here. I'm doing this presentation in another congregation, and a lady says, I was afraid for months and overwhelmed with fear and depression, because I was afraid that I had done something that caused my miscarriage. Like, I'm afraid I killed my baby, and I just, my husband's comfort isn't getting me through this. This is awful. This is awful. And thinking it over and thinking it over, and so depressed. And so she finally confronted it. She sat down with her dad, and they said, okay, let's talk about this, and let's be open about this. Okay, worst case scenario, whatever, and be open about it and not keeping it hidden, whatever. That's how she moved through that, right? And that's really helped her. And it could be that other people would need more than just that, but when I presented on this, that's the story she shared. And she said it really did help to address it and be open, not keep it in the inside in the darkness, but to bring it out to the light. And so with a situation like that, it's like, yeah, some of those little things aren't gonna help. You may need to tackle it in a bigger way to get through it. And of course, every person's different, every situation's different with that. Okay, any other thoughts on this? Yeah.
I don't know if it's a Chinese proverb, but it takes on an even better meaning from a Christian perspective, but it's like, if there's nothing you can do about it, why worry? If there's something you can do about it, why worry?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But also adding the component of like, God can handle it when it's beyond us. And
yes.
Nothing I can do.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And so we can find that peace. I've done my part, right? It's like the farmer who can rest because he's been doing his work. He can't do any more. He's brought in the crops. I can rest now. Everyone else might be scurrying, but I can rest. I've done my part. And then leave the rest of it to God. I did what I could, and the rest of it is then going to go to God. So I thought maybe you were going to mention the Chinese proverb, you make good food, people will come. Okay. Anything else? Okay, so we'll keep talking about this. How do we do the opposite of the disorder when it comes to depression? How do we do the opposite of the disorder when it comes to anger or shame, et cetera, et cetera? So that's what we'll be tackling next. I'm assuming it's going to go off in a second. Thank you all. Homework is here.
End of class.